If Christ is king, how should the Christian consider the kingdoms of this world? What does the Bible teach us about human authority and what it means to love our neighbors and our enemies? Before we render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, let's know what it means to render unto God what is God's. This is the Biblical Anarchy Podcast, the modern prophetic voice against war and empire.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Biblical Anarchy Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute and part of the Christians for Liberty Network. This week and every week on Biblical Anarchy, we seek to live counterculture to the empire of man and to instead seek the kingdom of God by unpacking what the Bible teaches about government, authority, and human relationships. I'm your host, Jacob Winograd. So for today's episode, I'm going to be playing for you about 35-minute segment of my recent conversation with Dave Smith I did on the LCI Green Room live stream. Dave is a comedian and political pundit, and that's not as unusual of a combination as you might think. Comedians are sort of funny because they either talk about truths everyone knows true, but sort of like really press on them in a way that stresses on certain like dynamics about it, or they also like to talk about things that are unpopular truths, things that we know are true, but we don't like to always talk about out loud. Or they bring truth to things that we never even considered before. And so part of what makes something funny often, you know, there's that saying that for something to be funny, there's usually an element of truth to it, right? And so comedians are often making things about reality around us funny by making us look at it from a different perspective, or to look deeper into it, or to just kind of realize things that have been sitting there obvious. And so Dave is also a libertarian, a fellow anarcho-capitalist, as I would describe myself. And I've had recent previous conversations with Dave, which I'll have linked in the show notes, where we talked more about religion and philosophy and things like that, as well as parenting. Dave is actually the person who first introduced me to libertarianism and Rothbard and Austrian economics and the problems of the Federal Reserve and the business cycle, and really helped me in my political theodicy, you could say. And then Dave and I have both been in the same pool, so to speak, within the libertarian movement or party, doing work over the last few years within the Mises Caucus. And he's always been someone who's willing to really push libertarians to do better. And when I first met him, this was in Pittsburgh, and he gave a speech to libertarians about how we need to be willing to deal with the real world, as well as to be, you know, grounded in proper motivations. And one of the things he talked about our groundings needing to be was ultimately in love for others, and that, you know, any political movement, any political revolution, any cultural revolution that wasn't based in that was doomed to fail. And recently, there's been a lot of talk about immigration, right? It's a national topic. I think people have acknowledged that this election is about two things, about the economy and it's about immigration. Well, Dave has what's considered by some in the libertarian world to be an unorthodox view on open borders. He's not convinced that open borders is the actual libertarian position, but rather he thinks, as an anarcho-capitalist such as myself, that, well, really, the state should be abolished and we should just have a private property society. And then we would have just a completely different paradigm for the movement of people. But while the state exists today and we're going to try to deal with the real world, we need to come up with solutions that are based on those realities. So in this conversation, it's me, Matthew Bellis, also of LCI, and Dave, and sit down and we dive deep into this problem and this question. Talk about how the government created the problem of this immigration crisis. We challenge the perceptions or the conventional wisdom regarding what open borders are. And we talk about libertarian theory a little bit. And we kind of stress this idea that if your theory leads to real world applications that just kind of fly in the face of common sense and being workable, then maybe there's a problem with the theory. You need to go back and rework it a little bit. And then this isn't even just about like theory and policy, but this is also about like shaping our culture with reason, with empathy, and a pursuit of a society that reflects our values. And as much as libertarianism is something we talk about that focuses on rights and legal theory and whatnot. You know, I've been saying this a lot lately on social media, but libertarianism also needs virtue, and it should be about virtue and what is good. And it should have almost a do no harm ethos that sort of goes along with it. And that's something Matt brought up in the conversation as well. So, you know, Dave talks a lot about the ideological problem as well as the practical problem and sort of the pragmatic ways we should go about trying to solve this. He emphasizes the need for libertarians to maturely engage with these issues, suggesting nuanced, localized strategies over broad federal mandates. So I think you'll really enjoy this segment. And then if you do, you can go listen to the entire conversation, which was about 2 hours, over on the LCI Green Room feed or on the YouTube channel. Also, just a disclaimer that, you know, Dave is a comedian. Although he's someone who believes in God, he's still sort of on a journey of discovering his personal beliefs. And so Dave, you know, as a comedian, can be a little rough around the edges with his language and rhetoric and whatnot. And I would encourage you just to be graceful as you listen to that. If you're someone who is a little bit sensitive to maybe some cursing, swear words here and there. But yeah. That's all I have for you then in terms of a introduction. I hope you enjoy this conversation.
All right.
This is where I'll have a little bit of, like, I guess, pushback or just question, because I'm trying to, there's even a possibility that we might even just fully agree, and this might just be semantics, but because I agree.
What a boring podcast this has become.
Oh, yeah.
We just agree on everything.
The incentives, I think, are definitely for the state to funnel people in. And I think that there is a degree of intentionality behind it. However, because I see that, I'm like, all right, well, then what's the solution to that? Because it seems like going to the people who are intentionally letting people flood in here and saying, stop doing, please don't do that anymore. I don't know that that's a viable solution, right? So I feel like, in a way, what we're dealing with is sort of what people describe as sort of like an anarcho-tyranny, where, like, it is sort of like, where, yeah, there is the natural state of things. There's what, you know, if the government stepped out of the way and let communities and let market forces take over, this problem would fix itself. But they are claiming a monopoly over it and then selectively deciding to not do anything in the area they've claimed a monopoly over. That's creating all sorts of distortions and problems. But then it's like, well, what do we do? Do we describe ourselves as, you know, being in favor of closed borders, or do we need to find a different path forward that still allows people to come in, but that maybe changes the dynamics of how they're coming in? So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so from my perspective, what we do, like what we do to, which, by the way, is weirdly, some of the people who have made the really bad arguments that we've talked about earlier have gone to me. They're like, but this, the problem is you're not going to convince people to think of anti-statist solutions or something like that. But I'm like, well, okay. What my thing that I really focus on, and by the way, there's a lot of strategies and I support a lot of them. Like, I support homeschooling your kids, and I support the Free State Project, and I support, like, all these different strategies of what we can do. But here's my thing, is that what I try to do is persuade, it's basically twofold, okay? I try to persuade as many people as I can to think about what libertarians are offering as the solution. So try to make as many new libertarians as we can. And by the way, I've been pretty successful at that. I mean, I'm not saying I'm the best. There's people who are better than me, but I'd say I'm better than all of the people who are criticizing me over my borders position. Just in objectively.
I'm a Dave Smith convert, so I'm a little biased. But
I've heard your name times, although there's another Dave Smith.
There's been others who are great too, but like the ones who like really criticize me are not, none of them. Are doing it the way I'm doing it.
Although, to be fair, when you were for open borders, so.
Well, there you go. But my other big thing is not just to influence people, but to influence the influencers, to influence the most powerful people.
Right.
And so I think that the more like my job is to get on, you know, to get the guys and girls who have millions of like followers because I might be in the hundreds of thousands, but I'm also like very connected. And I have the ear of a lot of people who have millions and millions of followers to get all of them to at least kind of like, I'm not saying I can make them all perfect libertarians, but I could take them from here to here. You know what I mean? And like move this needle over and try at least my best to get in front of the national conversation and move the needle to the degree that I can to move it over. Okay, a little bit more here. And my point is that the idea of open borders or open government property, for whatever you want to call it, is not consistent with libertarian principles and is a guaranteed poison pill where you will never move anyone, particularly under the current circumstances. So I'm not saying that like I have control of the government or that I can, if I say this, then that's what the government's going to do. But at the same time, I also think that a lot of libertarians are very foolish and simplistic to act like, well, if you don't support open borders, then you support an increase of government on the borders. And I know, look, there were a lot of people got real upset about the way I said it on Clint's podcast. And I will admit, like, it was like this. It was a nighttime podcast where I was having a whiskey and I was, you know, and I mean, I stand by everything I said, but look, when I said bring the entire military home and put it on the border,
that's a win.
Sorry, that's a fucking win. That's a win. Dude. That's a win. Like, don't tell me for a second. You're going to sit here and gripe with me.
I mean,
like,
it's such a win, but it's kind of unrealistic. But if we could,
sure,
oh my gosh.
But so is everything.
Yeah. So everything else.
Like, if the standard is unrealistic, then you could go like, well, abolish taxation. That's unrealistic. Right. You know what I mean? Like, so that's
private
not
property
that
rights,
mean anything.
Dave.
It's yes. That's unrealistic, but at least it's unrealistic in a way that could be sold to a huge portion of the American people. Whereas your unrealistic thing is like totally ridiculous. Dude, I've had libertarians arguing with me that if we just allowed homeless drug addicts into public schools, then everyone would realize public spaces are bad. And so we should be an ANCAP. And you're like, really? I'm already an ANCAP. And you advocating this makes me want to kill you.
Yeah.
So do you really think that's what's going to like convince normal people? Shoot really? Because I'm on your side. Yeah. And I'm going to kill you. I'm not going to kill you. I can't. But you get my point on that, right? Like, so if we're in the realm of what's realistic or not, what I care about is like, okay, well, what's realistic in converting people? What's realistic in like making people grapple with these ideas? And I'm sorry, but all these guys, you know, the guys who, again, I know people will criticize me for saying they just live in theory or something like this, but I hope you understand. My point is that I think they're getting the theory wrong.
Hmm.
But also just living in theory.
They're getting the theory wrong because they're not dealing with reality. Like, if your theory just exists in your head.
Yes, you always have to be mixing your theory with reality. And by the way, you always have to incorporate common sense into your theory. Everyone, even the most hardcore libertarian should recognize that even in a libertarian world, common sense has to be mixed in. That's always the case. I mean, look, I'll play these thought experiments. I'll do libertarianism 101 all night, you know, if you guys want to. But even in libertarianism 101, in an ANCAP society, if there was a libertarian court and there was like a kid who tripped and fell over your property line, and you wanted
Nick
to
Nukes,
right? Well, if you wanted to prosecute him for trespassing versus someone who like came in to break into your house, and that, you know, if you were the kid, if he went to trial, any libertarian court, I think, and I wouldn't believe in this shit if I didn't think this, but he would go like, okay, well, let's be reasonable. Like, let's be reasonable. Let's have some common sense here. He didn't intend to trespass on your property. And like, okay, if there's a little bit of damages, maybe the punishment would be, hey, he's got to come like work on, you know, your lawn for a week or something like that. But it wouldn't be like he's going to jail over that. Like, it just, And so you always, no matter what system you're living under or what system you're advocating, you always have to have this idea of common sense and what's reasonable.
Well, and virtue.
This is what's so crazy to me. Yeah. What's removed from the guys who are going, the homeless crackhead, fucking, he homesteaded the slide. You're like, you're totally removed from just what's reasonable or common sense. And anyone, look, I'm just saying, the guy who made that argument is never going to have an impact on the culture.
Right.
I guarantee that. I bet every dollar I have, he's never going to have, because almost everyone goes like, that's just unreasonable. There's no common sense attached to what you're saying. And again, you say that's not an argument. You're right. That part is not an argument. But it's true.
An observation.
It's true.
I think another element here, because I think everything we've said is true, but I think an even deeper part of it is that they're missing virtue. Because, and this is something I think we would all agree with, libertarianism, although it's a beautiful philosophy about peace and non-aggression and voluntarism. And listen, I'm all for that. The name of my podcast is Biblical Anarchy. Like I've really stamped my, I lead with the anarchy, which is really tough in Christian circles. But I put that albatross around my neck because it's a conversation starter. It's like, what do you mean? It's like, so like I can start talking about that. The reason I put biblical in there is because I'm like, guys, like I'm not just an anarchist. Like I'm a Christian. Like I have a system of values that my libertarianism is subordinate to. And I think the problem, let me be clear. I'm not saying that if you're not a Christian or not religious, that you don't believe in God or a higher power, that you can't be a good person, that you can't even be a good libertarian. But I do think that when you don't have that, libertarianism can sometimes become more than it's supposed to be to that person. It can become the system of all of their values, and it becomes a pseudo-religion at that point. And I think at that point, that's when it becomes wacky, because it's not supposed to be this holistic world philosophy that tells you everything you need to know about virtue and morality and common sense and values. You need, and so I'll put it this way, the government we get will only be as good as the culture of that people.
That was a little bit my point,
I completely agree.
Because there's so much to love about libertarianism. However, we often go through the exercises of going through what is not seen. What is seen is people crossing the border. What's not seen is all the people who are already inside the border who are being taken advantage of by the government and those who might seek to do harm on that side. And I think maybe that's where libertarians should add a little bit of bylines to their phraseology, where NAP or private property rights, but also maybe just do no harm would be a good adjective to add to that as well.
Well, and just no more hypocrisy. Like, I mean, it's not even like the classical liberal types will, our bleeding hearts about Ukraine, and we'll bring up all day long about the ways in which Russia has manipulated the populations and stuff, but then don't think that's crazy to bring up here. I came from the left, and when I was on the left, I was still a Christian. Something I do have a lot of compassion for, and I think all of us here do. I think even you do, Dave. I have a lot of compassion and empathy for the vast majority of the immigrants who are trying to come here.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, listen, our government has royally screwed them. And a lot of people are families or people who've been separated from their families. And I mean, it's just horrific. And no one here is advocating that, like, listen, you can be for some sort of border system. And that doesn't mean you're then for any excess of that system where people are beating people or locking them in cages or things like that.
You want to put kids in cages, right?
Yeah. No, they're
trying to. Both my kids are in cages upstairs right now. I had to do a podcast.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, but
I think that's a really important point. And I also think that it's just an important point for the social psychology of the whole thing, because people like will try to go, oh, you know, so you must hate Mexicans or whatever. And I don't support, look, I don't support the whole Constitution free zone shit. I don't support the whole, like, all of the baggage that comes along with that. And look, I also do recognize that, yes, if you have the government do something, the government's never going to do it in the right way. But at the same time, ANCAP libertarians can all recognize that, like, that's also true for the government prosecuting murderers. You know, if the government's allowed to prosecute murderers, then there's going to be people who are accused of murder who weren't actually guilty of the murder. And my God, if you actually want to open that box, there's so many people who, like, DNA evidence has overturned them and all this shit. And that, yes, that's why we're ANCAPs. That's why we don't actually, we believe in a better system. And our job is to always be pushing people toward that better system. And if anyone ever fucking says that I'm not doing that, like, God damn it. Okay, fine. I'm not doing whatever. But the answer isn't immediately I support the government not prosecuting murderers anymore.
Right.
The answer is I'm trying to work toward this system where eventually they don't have to. Like, and that's crazy if anyone says, like, oh, you have to immediately support no government police doing anything. Or while the government owns the roads, there can be no speed limits or stop signs or anything. Like, that this is stupid. Calling someone a bordertarian is as intelligent as calling them a murdertarian, because they still think the cops should, you know, like, prosecute murder. And so, look, I'm well aware that no matter what the government does, it's going to do it in a poor way. But also, I do think, like, to your point, Jacob, I grew up in New York City. I've talked about this before on my podcast, but the jobs that I had when I was a little kid and the jobs when I had when I was first starting out as a stand-up comedian, there were always a ton of Mexicans because they were shit jobs. And that's what the first generation Mexicans were doing. I used to believe when I was a little kid, it was the thing that made me believe in the minimum wage the most. Was that the Mexicans at the coffee shop that I worked at were paid, like, under minimum wage. And I was like, they should be paid more than this. This is insane. Like, I'm 14, but this guy's 34. And he's making the same thing I'm making. And, you know, I didn't understand economics or markets or anything at the time. So that's what I thought. They should make it illegal to do this. But I've had lots of jobs where I worked with first generation Mexicans, and I'll tell you, they were some really great people, really noble people who worked really hard every day just to support their families. I have nothing against these people. I think many of them are much better than the people they're much better than the libertarians arguing for open borders. Let me say that. But also, that's not what's going on right now. It's not. Like, look at what RFK was talking about when he went down to the border and brought a camera crew with him. It's not just Mexicans or even South Americans coming over the border. It's Africans and people from the Middle East and people from Asia and all this. It's like there's a huge thing going on here. And the answer is not that, well, we must, if Stalin is flooding Estonia or Ukraine with ethnic Russians, the libertarian position is this is great. That's not the case.
And I think
something much bigger than that. And if you look at San Francisco or New York City or San Diego or Los Angeles or any of these big cities where the public property is being completely mismanaged, the answer isn't we can't violate the non-aggression principle. It's like, no, listen, my point is that something intentional is being done here right now. This is a major crisis in this country. And libertarians, you know, look, if we have this vision of a private property-based society where there wouldn't be these problems, and I think we could probably all agree, not probably, we could definitely all agree that there wouldn't be these problems if we lived in a private property-based society.
Right.
But that does not, it does not follow from that, that it's incumbent on us to argue that, hey, American citizen, you must deal with these problems now until we get to Ancapistan, you must deal. Think about how weird it is that if there were a private park or whatever, that we all know what the solution would be. And that's what we're advocating for. We're advocating for a system where we wouldn't allow this. But as long as the government has control of it, we have to advocate that you have to allow all of it.
Yeah.
That just, come on, like just common sense tells you that that doesn't, that's not right. Yeah. And that's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
I just want libertarians to shed themselves of this unnecessary baggage. And I, by the way, one more thing I'll say, and then is that with all the bad arguments that I've gotten, one of the worst ones I've gotten was someone was saying about on was it when I was on Bob Murphy's podcast on the Mises Weekly podcast. And I said at one point that I was like, look, there are certain like albatrosses that are on our neck that we have to carry no matter what. You know, we have to say we believe heroin should be legal, even if that's very unpopular, because there's no way for a libertarian to get around that. Look, we may not like it, but a person has a right to do heroin and they have a right. They own their own body. They own what they put in their own body. And then he goes, and then Dave contradicts himself a few seconds later when he says, we can remove a heroin addict from a public building. I'm like, no, that's not a contradiction. That's not a contradiction at all. You can say that people have a right to smoke weed and also not say that people have a right to smoke weed in a third grade public school classroom. It's okay to remove them. That doesn't mean, that doesn't compromise any libertarian principles. So anyway, that's all.
Yeah. And I think in one thing I'm curious to get you to say more, and I feel like you've said it, but I feel like a lot of people just don't ever get to the point of like hearing you out honestly enough to let you get to this. But like, I don't even know like what your position is, if it's completely accurate to classify it as like you're advocating for closed borders. Like, I think you're very clear. You say I am against open borders, and I don't think open borders is the libertarian position. But I don't really hear what you're saying for in your various interviews or like on Bob Murphy's show or even here. And you're saying, well, we should build a wall and not let anyone come in ever. I think you're just saying like, we shouldn't, you know, we should just reject the idea that everybody can just come in and that there shouldn't be, you know, any system in place whatsoever. You know, and then we can also talk about, well, how should that be implemented? Because maybe it shouldn't be implemented federally. Maybe. You know, maybe we can do two things at once. Maybe we can try to, you know, advocate as libertarians that this is a real problem and point to how government caused it and then offer a solution that isn't, you know, kind of crazy and unpopular like open borders, but instead advocate for something that falls along the line of one of our values of decentralization and say, maybe this is something that the individual states should start having more of a say in doing.
Yeah.
So they're the ones that are the most immediately impacted by that.
That's a good question. And so it comes down to like, it's very weird what people, how people define open and closed borders, because I've seen a lot of people in the libertarian world will define open borders as like, they'll even define the Ellis Island system as open borders, which is like,
not just a porn border.
Well, yeah, that's not really what the Ellis Island system was. If you actually want to look into it,
making sure people don't have razor blades.
And then anybody who goes, "Hey, I'm not for open borders," they go, "You're for closed borders." And you're like, "Well, I've never said I'm for closed borders. Like, I've actually said that I think HAPA's sponsorship program is the best. That is the best proposal for like an interim plan that I've ever heard." And that's, by the way, that this is the thing where like a lot of these guys, a lot of the arguments that I've heard come down to like, well, I can reducto absurdum your position down to this. And as I mentioned, I specifically said on Bob Murphy's podcast, and I was so sure that this is one of the things you live and you learn. I was so sure that I'd go, well, now they're not going to be able to do that. Because I go, look, you can reducto absurdum this, but I can also reducto absurdum that. And they go, I can reducto absurdum this, and then I still think it's like a great point.
Those sound like Hogwarts borders, spells, by the way.
I'm not for no immigrants coming into the country. I think that we that would hurt the economy and hurt the country. I think that the best situation would be if we could approximate what it would be like under a true free market situation. You know, it's the same thing as like, what's the correct amount of wheat that should come into the country? Well, every libertarian knows there is no correct amount. It's what the market would dictate. Right. And in the same sense that I think the best you could get to what the market would dictate, you know, someone asked me on Twitter today, they said, well, what do you think immigration would look like in an anarcho-capitalist society? And I said, well, I mean, you know, they asked a broader question about what public property would look like. And I was like, well, look, we could probably pretty easily, you know, guesstimate that on private playgrounds and private schools and private things, yeah, like homeless drug addicts wouldn't be allowed in. They would be excluded violently if necessary. And I think we could pretty easily imagine that in an anarcho-capitalist society, there wouldn't be a caravan of 100,000 uninvited people coming in. I think that's reasonable. But there'd be lots of invited people coming in. I also think that's reasonable.
So
how do you best simulate that? And I think the HAPA sponsorship invitation proposal is probably the best one. But to your point, yes, I support the most local, like non-federal solution possible. So if Texas is closing their border, I support them closing their border. I don't think the federal government should interfere with them doing that. And that's, you know, I'm not claiming, and a lot of people claim that this is like a weakness in my argument, but I don't think it is, because they'll be like, well, I have this argument that it's unowned or that whatever. I'm not claiming a net taxpayers own that. And I've heard some people like Michael Reckenwald, I think, and has said this, where he's like, the taxpayers own the property. I don't exactly agree with that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that net taxpayers own the property. And I'm not saying that like I don't think that's exactly perfect. I think that when I gave you the example before where I said, hey, if we were to privatize this, by giving shares back to the net taxpayers or giving shares to a Swiss firm, is one of those preferable? You know, like my point is that I think one is clearly preferable. I think that the net taxpayers have a better claim than anybody else. And I'm not saying that it should be like they democratically decide. I don't think that's perfect at all. I think there's kind of a mix of the net taxpayers, of what is reasonable, what is best for a libertarian future. Like all of those things can be considered. And I think that when it comes to this imperfect situation that is government property, libertarians should be free to consider all of those possibilities. I don't think there's any one perfect thing. I'm not claiming that I have an irrefutable, consistent logical claim. My claim is that neither do these other libertarians who are pretending like they do. That actually the only irrefutable, consistent, principled position is that we should live in Ancapistan. But we don't. And so while we don't, we have to deal with these problems.
Right. As if libertarians haven't for decades been advocating for private property rights and, and the
about. Or that like, I'm not familiar with that. Right.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And as we're drawing to a close here, I mean, I wanted to touch just a little bit on the Hoppian sponsorship thing, because I find that to be just a completely reasonable solution, because I think that kind of gets you to something that's an imperfect, but close enough best of both worlds kind of thing, where it's not just unregulated flooding in, but like, you know, I can imagine just like if you implemented that, how quickly would charities and then employment agencies and things like that like churn up in the market to help facilitate those sorts of things? I mean, maybe the government monopolize it and they do it inefficiently, I don't know, but I can imagine that, you know, there would be a lot of ways in which that would facilitate people coming here. Look, put it this way, it can't be worse than the current system, right? I mean, the current system is the worst of both worlds, where if you want to come here legally, you can't, and they're letting people come in illegally all the time. It's just a perfect storm of bad on both sides. But what makes me so angry is like the progressives who are really motivated rhetorically by this, and then especially the progressive Christians who quote things from the Bible about being treating the foreigner well and loving the least of these. And listen, I agree with all that, but then put your money where your mouth is, right? Like, don't just lobby to the government to just let them all come in here and then be on the public dime. Like, there's nothing virtuous about that. If you want to go to your church and say, let's pull our money together and bring in 50 immigrants and house them and be responsible right. for them and take care of them, do that. I'd be all for that.
It is something. Look, man, in the current situation, particularly where you have, if you're dealing with the actual real world crisis, where you have Democratic governors, Democratic mayors in blue sanctuary cities who are out there going, we can't handle the buses of immigrants that we're getting in here, and it's completely draining. In New York City, there was an extra $500 million just in public school Spanish speakers that they had to hire because they have all these kids who don't speak any other language. And by the way, I'm not I hate these little kids who only speak Spanish. You're like, Jesus, it's horrible. They're in this country. They didn't choose to come here, but there's $500 million that they just had to spend this last year over the fact that there's all these little kids who only speak Spanish and they don't have enough Spanish speaking teachers. And the mayor's like, oh my God, what's going on here? There's a Democrat mayor in a blue sanctuary city. They're saying that. And so you're like, oh, okay. All right. We realize this is a real problem that's going on here, right? But for all the people who are like, oh, we want to help them. All right, fine. I really appreciate that. I could even be convinced to really donate some money to help them. But it's funny, but particularly just bringing it back to the libertarian world, because that's the world we have some influence in here, especially on this podcast, where they'll do this thing, where, they'll post these memes where it's like, your home, not your home, not your home, not your home. It's like, oh, okay. So
it's not yours either.
How many are you putting up?
Right.
Okay. So focus on your home. So just to be clear, you have a right to invite them to your home, right? But not your home, not your home. So who you got? What are you doing? And you know what I mean? So many of them, it's really easy to just sit there in this current situation and say, basically all you're saying is, I'm the good person. Mm-hmm. Because I say, you only have control over your home and not your home. But it's also I was mentioning before, it's the people who don't have kids versus the people who do have kids. But I also do think there's something just the people who are net taxpayers versus the ones who aren't. And there's something where it's I am supporting them already. I am. And I'm saying hey, I think I should have a say in this, in what I support. Meanwhile, you're supporting no one, not even yourself. And you're saying, hey, just so you know, this is all not your home. It's fine. I have no problem with that system. I have no problem with the system of where you only get to invite people to your home and I can't invite people to my home and all my neighbors can't. But that's not really what's going on.
There's still a lot of space on Martha's Vineyard.
Right.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
But they're not having them there. So who is it? I wish every one of those libertarians, I'm not trying to be a dick, but every one of those libertarians who shares that your home, not your home meme, I'd just be like, okay, tell me your annual income. You know what I mean? Post it, and I want to see some pay stubs also. Let me see that. And then you tell me how much you're actually putting into this and what you're telling me is mine versus not mine. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think we can close on this. I think what you're motivated by, and I think this is what I'm motivated by too, is that, listen, I believe very passionately, very strongly in Rothbardian libertarian anarchism. I do. I think it does give us a lot of answers to the problems going on in our world. And as a Christian, because I care as a Christian about peace, about being a peacemaker, and about loving the least of these, I think libertarian understanding of the economy and of politics is what helps us as Christians to to do those things to the best of our ability. So, but I also understand, like, listen, how are we going to reach people with this philosophy? And then what drives me insane is that the people who are, you know, doing it really well, like yourself, right? And then are getting blasted by a lot of these people online who just, they're not, I don't see them changing hearts and minds. And I don't, and I think the reason why is you and me and Matt, we're trying to deal with real people in the real world and their problems. We're trying to meet them where they are at and then kind of guide them along the way and not dismiss their concerns, because they're valid concerns for people who are living in the real world.
There was a our mutual friend DL what's his last name? I'm sorry.
Cummings?
Yes, DL Cummings.
Yeah.
He just had a little video out. I didn't see the whole video, but I saw the little clip that he posted. And he was basically talking about some of the people that have they've been responding to me. And that I was talking, there was one guy who said something where I was like, look, there's like these like drug addicts all over the streets in all these major cities. And this is, you know, again, I'm not trying to make myself out to be a victim. I'm not. Like, I moved out of New York City. It was the city I was born and raised in. And I bought a house in the country. And I'm not claiming to be a victim. But part of the reason, a big part of the reason why I left and part of the reason why I didn't come back is because, like, the homeless drug addict problem is out of control there. And I just simply won't have my little kids grow up around that. And so now, and I don't. And look, I'm not a victim. I'm able to do that. And now they will not grow up around that. But I was talking about that, and he went, there was some random guy on Twitter who went, oh, yeah, like, so that's your problem? Some guy's doing heroin on the street? Get a hobby. And he was just making the point. It's like, who are you messaging to? Like, and it is a thing. Like, I'm sorry. Like we said earlier, like, do you not have kids? That must be the answer, is you don't have kids. Because it's not like I'm going, hey, I have to look at a guy who is doing heroin and that's a problem for me. I'm going, I have a wife and babies. They have to deal with that. You're telling me that's not a real problem? Like, what? And then you will see these other like libertarians online who go like, oh, look at Dave, but think of the children, you know, and like kind of like mock your concern over that. And you're like, hey, think of the children is a really good argument. You know, like, I understand it's not the best if you're just being like, oh my God, there's rock and roll music. Think of the children. But like, if I'm talking about the war in Gaza and I go, think of the children, that's actually a really good point. Yeah, we should. Yeah. Think of the children, right? And like, it's just so bizarre. Like my thing for libertarians would be like, grow up, participate in the real world, and like, and try to grapple with people who have real problems.
All right. Well, that is the conclusion of this segment. Again, if you want to listen to the entire 2-hour conversation, you can go listen to that on the LCI Green Room audio feed and subscribe to that, or go watch the original live streams on either my YouTube channel or the LCI YouTube channel. And links for that will be in the description. I appreciate you guys listening. Looking forward to talking to you again next week.
The Biblical Anarchy Podcast is a part of the Christians for Liberty Network, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute. If you love this podcast, it helps us reach more with a message of freedom when you rate and review us on your favorite podcast apps and share with others. If you want to support the production of the Biblical Anarchy Podcast, please consider donating to the Libertarian Christian Institute at biblicalanarchypodcast.com, where you can also sign up to receive special announcements and resources related to biblical anarchy. Thanks for tuning in.